Hello, and welcome to another World of UX podcast. This is your host, Darren Hood. Thanks, everyone, for taking the time to join us today. A special welcome to all of you who are listening for the first time. Today, we're going to play the conclusion of the Talking Shop session that I had with Elizabeth Rosenzweig. Yep, got the name wrong last week. Own it. I told her about it. I went to reach out to her, confirm. Got the name wrong. It's pronounced Rosenzweig. But at any rate, I am so happy. I'm so happy to be able to share the airwaves with people like her. I'm so happy to have people who have great things to contribute for people to partake of that will come on the show, that will take time out of their schedule to come on the show and join me. She has been in this game for a long time. She has so many fantastic things to say. I'm just so honored. I'm so happy to have her on the show. Why don't we go ahead and dive right in and listen to the conclusion of that Talking Shop session. Let's do it.
I liked information architecture because I thought that was like a little niche that was like, but then that's evolved into, so like we've got our nomenclature problem. That's, it's not helping either, I think.
Right.
Yeah, like you mentioned GUI versus UI. Nobody even knows what GUI. Yeah, I mean, heuristics. Sorry, you're getting into rant. Which doesn't take much, but
no, but rants are welcome.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just a question. It's funny because this term in, you know, I'm teaching both at MassArt and also at Brandeis. And what's so fascinating, and then having also taught at Bentley, which is a business school, so fascinating to see students, graduate students coming in with these like literally three different points of view based on the school they're at of like what UX is. So it's like, what I saw at Bentley was very much on the research and like, you know, the methodology, the theories, very good. But like from the business side, we got the business side, right? And Brandeis is somewhere in the middle. And then I'm definitely like in art school, which I adore at MassArt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess I'm saying this because also like, so at every place I go, I give my students a design challenge. That's like always part of my class, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. This is the first time in an art school that I had a student just tell me, yeah, I'm going to build something. And he started to tell me physically what he was going to build and how he knew the engine. Blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, that's going to be so fun. But like, he just assumed that it didn't have to be on a screen. When I said design challenge, solve a problem, it doesn't have to be on a screen. But you know, a lot of us from the other points of view, like even at like say Bentley, it was like, no, screens, devices. That's another limiting factor. That's a recent development though. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. It is. I've had a few opportunities to work on devices.
Yeah.
I even had it's a horror story, a little bit of a horror story. So I won't get into this one. Not for today, but how that I helped drive the development of a docking station for a handheld automotive diagnostic tool. My name was stricken from the patent. So for some reason, something crooked that happened, but you know, that's the end of the nightmare on that. Cause it was my idea, but yeah, so it was fun to go in and do some ethnographics research, to watch people work in an auto repair shop, to study them to the nth degree, to understand what was happening with them physically, what was required, understanding the different heights of the people that were working, and then factor all of these different things, interview people, factor all of these things into designing a solution. And first it was the handheld diagnostic tool, and then it was a service cart. I helped design a service cart.
So that's cool.
No websites, no mobile apps this time.
Exactly.
But I found out that UX is pervasive. So, and I think more people are going to start learning that. Some of the people that are working in conversational UX, as they call it now, are starting to learn that. That is really, you're applying some of the same principles. There are heuristic elements that apply to a phone tree.
Well, yeah, I mean, everything. I mean, think about it, you know, just like some of, well, I like Jacob Nielsen's, just because some of them are like, you know, very straightforward, you know, sort of mapping the mental model, mapping like what it's like in the real world, you know, and that sort of stuff. But it's also just like you said, the basic, I honestly think you can apply UX principles to every single thing.
Yes.
Every single thing.
I agree.
In your life. Ask my kids. Poor guys. Every time we used to go, I mean, they're all adults now, but every time we go on vacation, every single elevator, I'm like, okay. They're like, I know, mom. Okay. Here's what's wrong with this elevator panel. My poor sons. They're just like,
I've done it too. Or I'm the one at the airport. I always show up early, but I always love going to airports and studying the parking. And the wayfinding inside the airport, or the way I'll go to a hospital and studying the wayfinding in the hospital, which is usually god awful.
No, it's scary and sad because people are stressed when they're in a hospital. Yeah, so they're like already like, no, but it's true. I feel like it's one of those things. Once you see, you can't unsee.
Yes.
And that's what I think. It makes me crabby a lot because I look at, like, I have to tell you, here's my favorite prop to say how, okay. So I just so happen to have this. I liked this. Do you remember this?
Okay. Oh my goodness. iPod.
Yeah, it was fine. It did one thing. Did one thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So that it didn't bother me, by the way, that it just did one thing. Okay. Then when I switched to this thing, okay. Well, first of all, not a phone. I just want to go ahead and, in case you wondered whether this was a phone, it does allow you to make phone calls. But I would not call it a phone. I would just call it my computer that fits in my pocket. And then why is this a good idea? Oh, sorry. You can't. That's a podcast, so people won't see this. But I'm like scrolling through all the 16 screens that I have on my iPhone. Oh, I know. I could put them in folders. Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. That doesn't solve anything to me. Then I just have which folder? Oh, no. Wait, this like. Ugh. And I know my friends at Apple hate it when I say this, but this iPhone that's in my hand was designed with planned obsolescence. So that means it's going to die in a couple of years, no matter what. So they can send me a note.
Good point.
And here's the other problem with that is we are mining the planet. Oh, remember I talked about that planet we have? Planet will be fine unless we mine everything out of it. Then it's going to get mad at us. It's going to be problematic for us here. Who it's going to get super hot. Oh, it's already getting super hot. Maybe we should stop mining and throwing these out. Oh, yeah. Okay. I recycle. See, you want me to rant? I can do it. I recycle. Every time I get a new device, I send it back every single time. Oh, what do they actually do with them? Are they going back? Are they taking the minerals out of this? I don't know. But all I'm saying is I don't see that as usable. I just.
Wow. Good point. Yes. Oh, my goodness.
All you have to do is wind me up and point me in a direction.
Wow. Well, thus far, you've talked about who you are. You talked about how you got into UX. You talked about how long you've been in UX. You shared your light bulb moment. You shared some things about the thoughts on UX today. We've talked a little bit about EQ. That just came up.
Yeah.
Some things about education. I want to go back and revisit something that keeps popping up because people don't know about your connection with World Usability Day.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Please tell that story. Yes.
So, okay. Well, here's the thing. And that's a great thank you. And thank you for asking me that. It's like there's so many things that get lost in like the world legacy of things. So in 2003, I finished being president of the Usability Professionals Association and became, along with Nigel Bevan, may he rest in peace, he and I were the co-directors of outreach. And this is a great story because I really love it. So my family's a baseball fans. My dad grew up in Brooklyn with the Brooklyn Dodgers, and he took me. And then once my three sons started to grow, we all went to, like, he took everyone individually to the Red Sox. So we were, like, really into the Red Sox. So in 2004, when I was coming up with ideas for what to do with outreach, and Nigel Bevan was in town in October, you may not know, I don't know what, how much baseball you follow, but
big
October
time.
2004. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. You know, so you know what happened in October 2004 in Boston. We won the World Series after like 80 plus years of not, after the curse of the Bambino, after, believe me, been a Red Sox fan my whole life. It's been very stressful. But 2004, we win the World Series. But what happens is, so I'm out to dinner with Nigel Bevan in October 2004, and the American League, is it the division, the ALDS, before, or maybe the ALCS?
ALCS.
Yeah. Okay, it was the one before the World Series. And we were in this, like, sort of bar restaurant. And you remember Nigel's British, right? So he's not a baseball fan, also very much not, like, but a soccer fan. Anyway, long story short, we're sitting there and the one of the key games is on, like, in the other room. And I'm talking like, oh, we gotta do something to get people's attention, you know, and I'm bouncing back like, oh, geez, Nigel, something happened. I gotta run. You know, I'm going back. And he's like, with his British accent, he keeps going, is this an important match? I'm like, yeah, it's an important match. Yes. And then they won. They won that game. I think that was the first of the four, and then the sweep, because they sweat. It was like the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I felt so excited. I felt so excited that the Red Sox possibly were going to, like, you know, end the curse of the Bambino. I started to think really big. And I started to think, like, how do people get attention? And then I started thinking about Earth Day. And I've since learned quite a lot more about Earth Day, but Earth Day started in 1970. Mm-hmm. 2 million people marched on the UN to save the planet because Rachel Carson published Silent Spring about how DDT was getting into our food system. And that actually got Richard Nixon to start the EPA. He probably needed a win, but okay, whatever his reasons were. So I thought, why don't we do that? And we realized we couldn't organize people to march on the UN the first time. So in 2000, so we started to plan this World Usability Day. The first one was 2005. And we were actually on like two continents the first year. And because UPA put a lot of money into World Usability Day, like the first few years we had like 120 countries, and like we were just really booming, and then it took, you know, it sort of took on a life of its own. It kept going, and then there was a certain point where when it was no longer funded by UXPA, and I was thinking maybe it would die. And then I got a lot of people, so like things settled. We weren't doing as much communications, whatever, the website, whatever, wasn't getting as much attention. And then people from around the world started sending me email. What's the matter? Is everything okay? Are we still having World Usability Day? And I was like, I guess we are.
Wow.
And it's 100% run by volunteers. And it's really like my consulting company, like I said, is sort of providing some of the tools like Constant Contact, but like we're getting lots. So it never, in fact, didn't die. And now we got a grant in 2020, actually, from SIGCHI to start this design challenge. Mm-hmm. Which we did. And then HCI International has picked it up. And now what happens is HCI International gives about $3,000 away for our design, for the World Usability Design Challenge. And we have a jury. So like the summer people, the submissions come in for the design challenge. And then the winner is going to be announced on World Usability Day. And then they get their prize at the HCI International Conference, which is the following summer. And then they get to present their work, and they get to be published in the late breaking papers. So that is like all of these things have just started almost organically coming in. We also do a speaker series.
Nice, nice.
Yeah. So, and it's the occasional speaker series, like I was saying to you before, like I got one coming up with folks in Nigeria. I did one in, many, many, many years ago with folks in Jordan. Some Israelis were actually involved. We did Ukrainian designers the first year of the war. You know, like we're trying to just give voices to people who need, I feel like should have their voice heard by more people. So, but anyway, World Usability Day has been something I've been doing for the last 20 years.
Wow. That's amazing. So, and it's part of what I say, we want to bring people on the show. There are so many people. We had somebody on the show recently who's an author who created the first e-commerce experience.
Oh yeah.
On internet, right. Harry Max. People don't know who that is. People don't know Harry Max.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, cool. Just wrote a book that was published by Rosenfeld Media. People know that Jorge Arango Death co-wrote the last version of the Polar Bear book. But people don't know who he is.
Right.
Brilliant minds. And then, but people opt for, I mean, in sort of a state of UX statement that I'm about to make, but I find it interesting that truth doesn't go viral.
Oh.
Common sense is no longer common. and anything associated with things like that, people just don't want to hear it. And so I love when people come on the show, especially with people that folks should know. They should know who you are. They don't, but they should. And so I hope that this helps point, because you are a treasure and people should see you as such. And it's just, you know, it bugs me. So one of the things we talked about when we were getting ready for the show was the whole thing about UX UI, the use of the UX/UI. We talk about it a lot on LinkedIn and we've had conversations about it. And you said something that inspired me.
Oh yeah.
I had never heard anybody say this before. And the term you use was conflated.
Yep. Conflate some two together.
Yeah. Can you elaborate on that for the audience a little bit?
Right. So what happens is UI and UX are two very, very separate things. They're related, sure, in the fact that they're on an experience or a computer. But UI is the design. We used to call it, as you and I were saying, graphic user interface, GUI. Now it's UI. It's not the same skill set. It's not the same kinds of things you look for. You know, you might be looking at real screen real estate, but you also might be looking at, say, contrast of fonts or that sort of thing. Whereas UX is the entire experience, all the touch points. So like, here's an example. I did some work. You might call it service design but I just called it UX for a museum. Mm-hmm. And it was the website and it was like the information from the website in the museum. Right. So it was both, but we weren't doing the design. They have their own design department at the museum. There's no way that they needed us like that. They were good at it. It was an art museum. They had people with their, you know, but what they didn't have was someone to walk through the whole experience. And when I say the walk through the whole experience, like starting from, I'm going to visit this museum. I'm going online to learn about the museum. Oh, now I found out there's an app. I'll take the app with me. I'll now go to the museum and then spend the day at the museum. Mm-hmm. But that's user experience. Oh, that whole thing is user experience. Mm-hmm. The design of the screen and the app, that's the UI. So when you conflate them together and you do UI UX or UX UI, to me, it sounds like you don't know about either one. Now, I understand it's a trend for some reason. It's a trend for people to say that. But I feel like it's like putting two things together. It's conflating them. It's making them be one thing and they're not one thing. Mm-hmm. In my mind, I'm trying to think of some analogy, but I can't think of it. It's so annoying. But it's like, then you diminish both. You're diminishing both things because I guess the only, I don't know if it's a good analogy, you can tell me, Darren, but I was thinking about the difference between a DJ and like a performing artist. And if I said DJ performing artist in one thing, that was like, what, I'm like all doing everything at the same time, but like no one would do that because they understand the difference. It's the delivery of the music that the artist is doing. That's two separate things.
Right, right.
And if you put them together, you would diminish both. You would diminish the work of the artist and the DJ who is carefully curating yada. So to me, it's the same thing. It's like taking two huge fields that take huge amounts of skill sets and yes, they're related, but then making them into one thing makes them into nothing. There's not a thing. It's creating something that doesn't exist. While sometimes that's good, this is just diminishing everything.
Yeah. And two things come to mind. One, and I've had conversations with Karen T. Lynn about this, brought up how that the slash, people don't understand what the slash denotes. So right. When they put the slash between UI and UX, they're saying that they're interchangeable.
Yes.
And they're not. And they're saying that they're one and the same, as you mentioned, they're not. And the one of the examples I like to use is, okay, you're going to pick up the kids from school.
Yeah.
You don't say, I'm going to pick up the kids from school / stop at a traffic light. You don't say, I'm about to eat my dinner / broccoli. It's the broccoli is a part of the effort. You don't need to mention that. You can tell somebody what you had for dinner, but throwing the slash in there, it brings up, there's a sense of redundancy. But the biggest thing to me that bothers me is it has detrimental impact on UX maturity levels. It detrimentally impacts perception, value perception and proposition, because a lot of people think that visual design can be done by practically anybody. Matter of fact, a person will sit down, you'll have a stakeholder walk to you with a design that they did. So they think that it's that simple because they did it while they were doing God knows what.
Oh, that's so interesting. You know what it made me think of? And so I'm going back to thinking about like what I remember specifically when we started working on digital photography for the everyday person. Mm-hmm. And the conversation for those of us who have been trained artistically was like, oh, wait, everyone's going to be a photographer now. No. Okay. So here we are. Everyone is a photographer now. Okay. Now that's good and bad because a lot of people, right. And I still have my own feelings about it, but now it's happening with design too. It's like, oh, I have a design tool and AI is making it worse. Oh yeah, I can design. It doesn't, I mean, have you been to an art school lately? Like it's not easy. It's not easy.
No.
You go through
a lot. No, not at all.
So it's diminishing, but maybe it's also that there's a bunch of things that are being diminished and that's just one of the many and we're caught up in it. But I think it's particularly hard because, well, first of all, those of us that have been doing this for a long time, are very passionate, like you and I, we care about it because for me, speaking for myself, UX can change the world for the better.
Yes.
UI is also wonderful and important and all of that. But UX is so poorly misunderstood. And I wrote a book, as you know, behind my shoulder here, Successful User Experience. But it was also just thinking about as user experience, you know, and that it's, I guess what I'm trying to say is I kind of wanted to call the book Getting It Right instead of Successful User Experience Strategies and Roadmaps. But I was at the wrong term for that. But also what I'm trying to say is that our field keeps evolving and there's some of this that's like, oh, you know, we're big with a lot of words, doing a lot of these methodologies that are super difficult. Okay. And that's great. I don't want to sound like an elitist academic, like, oh, everyone has to have a advanced degree, but it is, you wouldn't ask someone to do surgery who hadn't been to medical school.
Right.
So while maybe it's not quite that extreme, I kind of feel like we're venturing off into that because if you don't really understand UX, forget about that. UI UX, if you even think it's one thing, the kind of stuff you're going to design, I'm scared, like, because you don't really understand the person. And if it's in certain things like e-commerce, okay, whatever. So you're going to convince them to buy something they don't want, or maybe you'll help them find something they do want. That's great. Mm-hmm. What if it's like a voting machine or a medical device or...
Yes.
My stocks that I'm trying to manage by myself, you know, like whatever it is, my business I'm trying to run. What if the software I have, I can't figure out and it looks like I've had a loss when I've had not had a loss. You know, it's like not trivial. These things are not trivial. And somehow to trivialize it like anyone can do it or it's not that big a deal. It just, I don't know, it creates so many problems.
Yes, absolutely.
It could go on for a long time, but... I feel like I shouldn't rant all the time. I was trying to tell you, like trying to be more measured to like, nobody wants to listen to somebody ranting all the time. Right.
Oh, but when they're saying good stuff, I mean, the only person that sees it as a rant is the person that's doing the ranting. And then those of us that actually see the value in it are just taking it in.
Okay. Thank you.
Just taking it in.
I mean, I guess it really like going back to that aha moment, which was a long time ago, you know, World Usability Day started 20 years ago. So this has been something I've been thinking about for 20 years and it gets me mad because like medical devices used to not even have regulation to do human factors testing. At least they have human factors testing, which is really, really great.
Yes.
A lot of it's like risk mitigation, which is fine. That's important. Super, super important. I'm not trying to diminish that. That's huge. And very complicated. But like voting machines, as you know, in my book, and I'm not the only one, like the impact of a bad design changes the presidency, like in 2000, when the hanging chads were a result of a bad design. And do you know? Do you know in 2000, you know, that that was the Al Gore, George Bush debacle where like there was all, oh, they had to keep recounting and recounting. And it came down to Broward County in Florida. Mm-hmm. And Nature Magazine, which is one of the most prestigious scientific journal on the planet. So in 2002, they published an article. Researchers from Canada went down to Broward County in Florida and interviewed the voters and ask them what their experience was in voting. And if you look at the ballot that was used, it's a butterfly ballot. I know I'm a podcast, I'm using my hand, so I'll just try to explain it. But butterfly ballot was supposed to be a single-sided ballot with punch card. Mm-hmm. With, it holds your punch card on one side. So the head of the election committee in Broward County, who's not a designer, my favorite example of the horror stories, she decided that everyone was elder there. I think I'll just make the font bigger. Okay, so what did that do? Made it 2 pages. Oh, 2 pages. Okay.
Oh, boy.
Nothing lined up. Nothing lined up. So let's say I wanted to vote for Al Gore, but he was had the same dot as Pat Buchanan. Oh, wait. Did I stick my little voting thing in and go, wait, no, not Pat Buchanan. George Bush. And then maybe I did that. And guess what that would be? Hanging Chad, pregnant Chad, blah, blah, all those Chads, because that's a little thing you're poking out. So if they're not all the way poked out, it spoils the ballot. So if people were confused by the design and kept like in and out with the poking of trying to pick which one, they spoiled their ballot. Their ballot was not counted because of a bad design. So here's a study. Look it up in Nature Magazine. 2000 election. So George Bush, I believe, and I'm not sure I have this exact number right, but it's in the ballpark of 540 votes. He had 540 votes in Broward County, and that basically turned the entire election, right? It came down to that county. So the Nature study about the bad design identified at least 2,000 people who spoiled their vote who would have voted for Al Gore.
Wow. That reminds me of the story that Alan Cooper told in the beginning of the inmates running the asylum.
Yeah, yeah. I love that book. Yeah.
What a powerful way to start a book. But the pilot, the controls in the cockpit weren't really usable.
Yeah. Yeah,
and exactly. Then what, 200 and some odd people, something like that, lose their lives because somebody trusted design in the hands of an unqualified individual.
Exactly right. That's 100,000% right. That's exactly it. And that's the tragedy right there. It's not trivial at all. I mean, the impact is huge on people's lives. Like, we would have had another president if someone was paying attention to those ballots and the design down there. And I don't want to get off on that too much, but think about that. The difference between Al Gore and George Bush and what happened in the world. I mean, this is not the first time. I'm sure it's happening. And it's not like, it's really crazy to me too when I hear like, oh, the voting machines are rigged. Guess what? They're definitely not rigged. They're designed poorly. They are also really old. So do you know the other point that's just like not exactly a UX thing, but gets, so the touch screens and some of the digital machines, and maybe hopefully for this election they'll get changed, they're like 10 years old. Do you know what happens to a touchscreen when it's 10 years old? It doesn't select the thing.
It's not calibrated.
That's it. It's not calibrated. So it could look like it's rigged. It could look like I'm voting for this. And it's not rigged. It's broken. Broken. So, I mean, there's so much misunderstanding by technology, but then add the design layer on top. I just feel like people don't, I don't know. They just don't get it. And it's hurting us.
I don't think people want to get it. I think what people want to get is their check. And I think that there's too many people who do not love the discipline. No, and they are in self-preservation mode.
Yeah.
People who have a lot of experience are being discarded by the boatloads in favor of it. Matter of fact, I recently did a little mini audit of some job posts. And I've started to see more jobs that want 10 or more years of experience, which I did not see very much at all 5 years ago. But I'm seeing way more jobs, including jobs for directors and managers that a lot of director manager jobs that I've been looking at only want 1 to 2 years of experience. Makes no sense. Not 1 to 2 year of director experience, 1 to 2 year of UX experience.
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm starting to see that. And the cap that I'm usually seeing, the 10-year jobs, I'm surprised to see any at all, but I'm probably only seeing them in about no more than 3%. Most of the jobs I see are looking for 3 to 5 years of experience. And then somebody did an article the other day that somebody wrote me on LinkedIn and asked me for my input. This happens a lot. People always want to know what I think.
You're very verbal on LinkedIn, which is great.
And they said, Derek, please tell me what you think about this. And they showed me an article written by 3 mega entitled individuals. I'll leave it like that.
Okay.
And they were trying to give their impression of a seniority timeline for UX professionals.
Oh, God, that wasn't the Indeed.
No, not that terrible Indeed thing where they said that once you hit 55, you're on the decline. Yeah. Man, they're and people are going to buy into that. A lot of younger people buy into it because it favors them, but they don't realize that after I snap my finger, it's going to be you.
That's the only thing I don't get. But I do know some senior people who still think that younger people are more innovative, and I always have words with them.
Insane. The thing I get from people is, I like bringing in the younger people because they have new ideas and they're passionate. Older, more seasoned people are passionate too, but we're also very tempered. We learn how to be more temperate about our passion because unbridled passion doesn't really, number one, you'll burn out. Yeah. And number two, it doesn't benefit anybody.
Right. I mean, the thing is, I do enjoy, maybe it's the teaching, but also working with younger people because they will sometimes show me things that I haven't seen or give me a new perspective. And I love that.
Yes.
But the inexperience is very problematic. And I just don't get the, we'll just say ageism, because like we're all going to age.
Yep.
Like, that's a confusing thing. So why knock people for doing something that we're all going to do? Like, do I have control? Like, what's my alternative to not aging? Okay. As my grandmother would say when she was still alive, well, it's better than the alternative, which is dying. So what's that whole another false narrative in life? See, this is an American thing. It's not only an American thing, but I do find that there are other cultures I go to where being old is a little more revered. Even if they call me auntie, but still. At least it's a respect, like it's a respectful.
Yeah.
I feel like it is. I feel like I'm treated like, okay, you're an older person. It's not like you're fragile. You're to be respected. And I mean, I kind of like that because it's like, okay, what did I do to earn respect? Well, I've lived a long time and I've been through a lot of things. And here I still am. So I don't know.
Maybe it used to be. It used to be respected here.
I know, that's what I'm saying, but not in America.
Not anymore. Not in America,
despite the fact, okay, we won't get into our politics here, but it's weird. Unless you're running for president on one side, then you can be old. Otherwise, you can't be old.
Remind me, my wife and I went into a restaurant the other day, and this goes back to what you were saying about UX being applicable to everything.
Yeah.
I'm the head of a movie group. I love movies. We went to see a movie. We went by ourselves this time. No, nobody wants to see this particular movie. That's fine. I need to get. That's how you get me away from a computer. If you don't, I'll sit here and work all day. So get me to a movie theater. And a little restaurant right outside the theater. We've never been in there. They never seem to be open. Wait a minute. They're open. We got to go in there and look around. Got to check this place out. We go into the place. Now, from the out, it always looked like it was closed because everything looked dim from the outside. We go outside and find out, actually, a lot of the times we looked over there, they were actually open and the place is just dim
in
broad daylight. So that was, I'm like, okay, well, okay, not a problem. So I'm looking for a menu. They probably got to hand us one. It's a restaurant. Got to hand us a menu. We like to just look at the menu. We're just checking the place out. Okay, thanks. Thanks for coming in. They hand us the menu. You remember years ago when you would go to a bank and open up a banking account? I don't think they do this anymore. I don't remember last time they've done this. And they would give you a little booklet.
It was a long time ago. Yeah.
Almost like a 4-point font.
Yes.
That's what the menu looked like.
Oh my God. No, so that's crazy.
It was really about a 6 to 8 point font. Probably 8.
Oh my God. Terrible. Was there at least good contrast or no?
There was good contrast, but they must have decided that there was way too much stuff on the menu, or somebody decided not to have a 4-page menu. So they put everything on the front and the back. So they jammed. That's why it was so small. So the person, okay. and this really tying onto the ageism statement.
Yeah.
Here's one of the reasons why companies need to make sure they have some older people on their UX teams.
Right.
Nothing. Right. I love our young people, but a lot of them do not empathy. I was recently talking about how empathy is both a skill and a trait.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And there are people that they have not worked on the skill enough so it can become a trait. And you can tell where these people are, because it only takes a person with no empathy to put together a 2-sided menu with no larger than an 8-point font.
Yes, that's correct.
And then it's already dim and you're jamming everything. We can't read the menu. So I said, you can keep looking at it. I'm out. And I went outside because you already told me you don't want me in here. You'll hear me talk about this in the not too distant future about the Soylent Green mentality that's starting to take over. Remember that old movie with Charlton Heston? And I'll spoil it for some people. I'm a movie guy. Remember, folks.
That's fine. Okay.
And in this movie, you got to go. If you love old classic sci-fi, it's a must watch. And you know what? I'm not going to spoil it. I'm not going to say anything.
Okay. What's the name of the movie?
Soylent Green. That's it.
Soylent Green.
Soylent Green. For those of you who are into it. Matter of fact, just go on YouTube and look up the end of Soylent Green. I'm sure the end of Soylent Green is on YouTube. And you'll see when I do the talk about it, you'll see that there's this Soylent Green. They're trying to sort of erase the relevance, the Indeed thing. They're trying to erase the relevance, the prior impact. They're trying to advance at our expense. They're trying to just pretty much remove older people from the equation.
Oh my God.
That's really what that movie is about. In a nutshell, without giving the movie away. They're trying to remove older people.
That's awful. Oh my God.
That's what they're doing. They're doing it in UX. They're doing it in other fields too, but this is our domain. So we're talking about UX, but they act like there's nothing for us to contribute when in fact, people are starting to design things as if we don't exist.
So I've been through that. Yeah. Like not existing. That's really bad. I mean, I just feel like, God, I hate to get into it that much, but you know, we're in this late stage capitalism and the patriarchy is just fighting for relevance and trying to hang on. And so a lot of what happens is any of us who isn't, I'll just say a member of the patriarchy, we'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Not me and you, for sure. just leave it at that. They want to make us, you know, like we got to be erased. I mean,
that's it.
Otherwise, what are they going to do? How can they keep the patriarchy alive if diversity continues to flourish?
Yep.
And old people are part of diversity.
Yep.
Although that's insane. When I said that out loud, that doesn't make sense. But I'm just putting on my, if I was a patriarchy person,
right.
If I was a supporter of the patriarchy, what would I think why someone like you and I might not be relevant? Lots of reasons why. Mostly probably we're a threat, though. Sorry. See, I'll stop talking. I'm gonna get this one in trouble.
No, this is dynamite stuff, though, Elizabeth. I always love like a fire, more of a fireside chat today.
Yeah, definitely fireside chat. Well, that's my favorite thing these days to do. Also because I don't know about you. I feel like I've given so many presentations in my life. I can't even remember. Like I could dream in a presentation. I've given so many. But like talking and having a dialogue, that's a whole other thing, you know, because it's more like you like organic. And also we're just two people talking, you know? And I think it also allows us to like just doing these kinds of, you know, fireside chats. It also allows us to focus on what we have in common, which I think you and I have a lot, actually, and sort of like how to, you know, it's not like do the best with what we have, but like shine from where we're sitting.
Yes.
You know, be the best us that we can be.
Mm-hmm.
Be the best Darren and Elizabeth that we can be.
That's, yes.
Yeah. And that's also not dismissing our age.
Yes.
Or all the other demographics about us.
Yep. Dynamite stuff.
It's so fun.
Almost time to sign off. So what is your last statement? What do you want to leave the audience with, Elizabeth?
So I actually think that there's quite a lot that we can do to improve the world, starting from a 30,000 foot view all the way down to the weeds.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that the basic foundation of user-centered design is something we can use to solve problems, big and little, and not just to solve problems, but to also create solutions that bring out our potential in ourselves, which ultimately helps us make the world better.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what drew me to user-centered design, UX, whatever you want to, I wish we could just call it one thing, but all of that aside. And so that sort of relies more on, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And mm-hmm. that's why we have to work together. And I guess for me, what I love about diversity and working with people who aren't like me, I learned so much. I learned stuff yes. about the world. I learned stuff about me. And that's user-centered design too. So I guess that's a good sums up my thinking in the field.
Yes, yes. And it's funny you mentioned that. I went to an innovation summit when I worked for Bosch. And one of the people, this is at the Innovatrium at University of Michigan, where this was conducted.
Oh, it's cooler, yeah.
One of the things I learned about innovation was that diversity is required.
Yes, required.
If there is no diversity, there will be no innovation.
Excellent. Ooh, that's very good.
And that stuck with me, as you see. It stuck with me.
No, I like it. I like it, too, because it's totally right. Because otherwise, you know, and that sums up a lot of what we were saying, because, yeah, if you have the same old people who are all the same, they'll keep doing the same old thing.
Yep. Exactly it. So I want to thank you for taking the time to come on and share with the folks. We worked for a long time to put this together. We finally able to connect.
There was a lot of cancellations, but we finally did it.
Yes.
I'm so happy. It was worth waiting for.
And I want to take time to personally thank you, because there's not a lot of people in our space that are outspoken. And I want to thank you for taking the time all out there to chime in on some of my posts, and sometimes I respond to something and you come behind me and you say or vice versa, or I see you. And it's just, we need more voices. UX has been people who had something of note to say.
Yeah.
Were silent for too long. And that's why we're where we are today, because we were too silent. Now we let it manage itself, and this is where we are.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting point, because like with World Usability Day, I think I was sort of seeing that and how it sort of changed. But it's still here and we're still here. So we don't have to be silent anymore. And we're not.
Yes. Yes.
So that's great. It's always a pleasure, Darren. I always like talking to you. And like I said, this was worth waiting for. So I'm glad we did it.
Yes. Same here. Thank you. So, folks, that is all the time we have for today. Thanks for taking the time to listen to the podcast. Tell your friends, tell folks in your UX communities about the show. No, we don't spend a lot of time telling you how to do the work. There's enough people already doing that. One thing's for sure, though, there's a lot of plagiarism in our discipline, and nobody's copying what I'm doing. So they can't speak from the heart the way that me and my guests do. So we're glad to be able to bring things like this to you. Thanks to all of you who reach out to me and let me know how the show is impacting you. Make sure wherever you listen to the show, make sure to give it a rating. If we're helping you, make sure to share the show. And you're doing us a huge solid when you do so. But until next time, this is Darren Hood, the host of The World of UX, signing off. Happy UXing, everybody.
Mm-hmm. RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.